Solitaire Rose Novelcast, all in part 8. This is the second of three episodes that I'm going to be using to catch up on what I should have recorded over the last month and a half. So there will be another episode next week. That's right, 3 weeks in a row you're getting a new episode of Novelcast. They have moved to Friday, and then after next week's we will be back on our every other week schedule. And next week I should have some more news about the ebook for 5 years After, as well as another physical book collecting Worldwide News, my comic strip that I do with Dangerous Dan Moore. That's worldwidenews.solitairerose.com. Head on over there. The strip has started up again because it's an election year, and I would really appreciate it if you would head on over. Dan's really been doing some good work on the strip, and I do okay. What you need to know. Johnny Finch saved up all of his extra money from playing poker through high school and college for his big dream to be a poker star. And in his first poker tournament, he was knocked out on the very first hand, losing his entire bankroll. He and his fiancée Dawn have returned to Ravensport, Illinois, where they now need to figure out what they're going to do now that they've graduated college. Dawn is on a train to Minnesota for a job interview at the Hazelden Clinic. Johnny's left behind, waiting to find out what has happened. Also, one of Johnny's roommates, James, has been exhibiting strange behavior. We pick up where we left off last time. Chapter 15. James got home late. He was a bit drunk, having had a few beers after work. Hell, he'd had a few beers at work. But he knew that once it hit 8 o'clock, the city cops on Thursday were done for the night, so that the city didn't have to pay them overtime. And the weekends were a lot busier. When the college was in session, they hired a couple of temps and brought in state troopers on Thursday, since the bars would run specials. But they dried up when the students did. James had parked his car on the street instead of trying to get it into the driveway between the other cars. The last time he'd tried that after a few beers, he'd hit someone's car, had to back out and park on the street. It was hard work trying to convince them that they'd gotten the scratch in the college parking lot, but it had worked. He just didn't want to have to do it again. Too much work. He unlocked the door and listened before going in. If the guys were up, he'd be able to get someone to make him supper, since he was sick to death of pizza, and he hadn't eaten anything but handfuls of cheese on a dare all night. It was quiet and the lights were out, so he knew he had to play it cool and come in quietly. If he woke people up, he'd just have to deal with them being mad at him. Again. It seemed like people were mad at him all the time now. He shut the door behind him, reached over to turn on the light when he heard, "Let's just leave it off for now, James." "Shit!" James yelled, startled. He flinched back into the door, shutting it with a slam, and dropped his keys on the floor. "You scared me to death, Johnny," he said, scrambling to pick up his keys. His eyes adjusted to the dim light, and he saw that Johnny was standing in the dining room, and it looked as if he'd been sitting at the table a while with his checkbook, a bunch of bills, a calculator, and a huge bottle of water on that table. It was a shock to see those things, since normally the table was filled with boxes of cereal, uneaten fruit, cans that hadn't been put away yet, and other things that should have been in a cupboard somewhere. "What's up?" James said, shuffling into the dining room and pulling out a chair. "That's what I wanted to know," Johnny said. Johnny didn't join him in sitting down, but instead put his hands on the back of the chair he'd obviously been sitting on and leaned against it, looking at James. His gaze made James feel horribly uncomfortable, and James wondered if this was how people who played poker against him felt when he was staring them down. "Okay, obviously we could play questions all night long," James said, "but I'm confused enough already. What did I do and how can I fix it?" "I've been going over the bills," Johnny started. "Hey, I'm sorry. Things have been really tight for me lately," James said. Johnny cut him off. That bullshit won't fly, since I hear that you kick Rob's ass in tips every night. You've been bragging about it for months, and I think everyone in the five-state area knows that you make more than he does. But I checked. You haven't paid your share of the bills for almost a year. I have all those notes that you'll pay part and make it up later, but you never seem to make it up. Damn, James, I don't mind helping you out once in a while, but this is an ongoing problem now. Since I'm not playing poker anymore, I can't carry you. James wiped off his upper lip and shook his head. You don't know how hard I'm trying. I'm working a lot of extra hours, and it's dangerous out there. I had to buy a gun a couple of weeks ago because I don't have cops out late on a Thursday anymore. That cost a hell of a lot of money. Johnny sighed and visibly shook his head. It's a line of crap, James. I thought you respected me. At least you wouldn't try to pull the same lies you pull on your work. Rob has a new girlfriend, a comic book habit, and is paying for most of his college, and he's able to pay his share of the bills. You're going to college on a disability claim and got your car as a present from your parents, and you can't pay the cable bill? Jesus, James, do you think I'm an idiot? No, James said, feeling small and if he was in front of his father for stealing money out of his dad's change drawer for candy. Are you bringing the gun in the house? James said flatly. No, James said, I keep it in my car. Then let's go to the car and take a look at it. If it's so expensive that it's kept you from paying your share of the rent and bills for a year, it must be pretty damn nice. It's not there right now, James said, panicked. Johnny didn't flinch. He didn't move a muscle in any way, as if he knew that was the answer he was going to get. I don't want a gun in my house, James. Not for any reason. We drink enough around here that it's dangerous to have something like that, let alone the kind of shit that you put in your body. Wait, James said, the alcohol combining with the stress of the situation, making it so he could feel himself getting incredibly angry. Don't turn this into a lecture on drugs. You've done drugs, too. You're a choir boy, you little poker star. You're right, Johnny said calmly, which is why I said no guns. When I head upstairs, I want to hear you go out to your car and put the gun in it. If I find the gun in the house or on you while you are in this house, I'll call the fucking cops so fast you won't even get a second swallow of beer before I have them on the phone. The hell crawled up your ass and died, James said as Johnny turned to go upstairs. Johnny didn't even turn back when he said, It's time all of us grew up, Jim. I don't have the big bankroll to carry people on my back anymore. Times are changing whether we want them to or not. He then turned and stared at James. And James felt as if he were stone-cold sober from the intensity of the glare. You may not have much time to get your shit together. Not much time at all. Chapter 16. The next morning, James woke up around noon with a splitting headache. The sun was shining directly in his bedroom window onto his face, and his skin was warm to the touch. He wondered if it were possible to get a sunburn from the sun shining in the window. He listened for a moment before getting out of bed, making sure that it was quiet and no one was blasting the TV or shouting at anyone. He knew that Kyle worked, hoped that Johnny was at work too. He had no idea in the world when Rob worked, since his pizza place had daytime hours. The clock showed it was a little past noon, meaning he only had about 3 hours before he had to be at work again. It sucked being assistant manager, but then everybody but the new kids were assistant managers, since the company's philosophy was to give people a title so they would be less likely to leave. It also meant that sometimes, when they were short-handed, he had to work inside the store, which he hated. He didn't hate answering the phones. That part was fun. What he hated was being around all those people who were always on his case. He'd been given 2 written warnings in the last month and was told the boss was looking to give him a third the next time his bag didn't cash out properly. He thought he had good explanations when they came up short, but obviously the explanations weren't good enough. Thankfully, tonight he was driving and locking up. That was the other reason the managers made people an assistant manager. He didn't like to have to stay until 2 in the morning to close up. He wanted to be out of the store by 10 o'clock at the latest, and preferred to be done at 8 at night so he could be home with his family. It made what he had to do tonight a lot easier. He heard a muffled voice outside his room, probably off in the dining room or the kitchen. He went over to the dresser and opened a pill bottle. Downing a couple, he swallowed them dry, hoping they'd work pretty fast to get rid of the pain in his back, and he laid back down on his bed. He didn't move from there for about another hour, just drifting between his sleeping and waking state. It was always the best time of day for him, and it ended all too soon when his alarm went off. Fuckity, fuck, 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 he said, turning the alarm clock off and getting out of bed again. He grabbed the jeans he'd worn the day before, fished a clean shirt out of one of his dresser drawers, and wandered off toward the shower. Another lousy day had begun, but hopefully he'd be out of the mess he was in by the end of his shift. Chapter 17. James was waiting at work for the night to be over. Fridays were an insane night when the students were in town, but during the summer, they were busy until around 10, then it dropped off to maybe 2 or 3 pizzas an hour. The manager had left at 10, and James was there alone with 2 drivers who were both out on the road. They closed at 1, but they really didn't finish until closer to 2, since they would take orders until 1 in the morning. The drivers would be out till the last pizza was delivered, then he would have to total up their bags, give them their tips, log in the money for the day, balance it against the register, then finish up all the paperwork and drive the money to the bank. It was stone dead as he waited for the drivers to come back. The pizza place was small, just big enough for the huge ovens, a metal rack to put the box pizzas on, and a long counter that held all the different things people could get on their pizza. James had put them all away around 11 and just grabbed what he needed for each one out of the refrigerator in the back so that he would be ready to go as soon as he got all the paperwork and money work done. The walls were painted a painfully bright red, and the bright lights inside the place hurt his eyes. It was the only lighted building for blocks, as the sub shop in the next building was closed, and the rest of the building for blocks around were residential, dark, quiet, and sleeping. The ones that weren't filled with sleeping people were empty, rental homes waiting for the students to come back. The neighborhood was quiet, even on a Friday night, and the bars closed earlier in the evening, so James knew there wasn't a party somewhere. He'd be going home after the place closed. He'd stared at the clock, which was designed to look like a plastic pizza with bright red fake pepperoni at 3, 6, 9, and 12 o'clock positions. James knew exactly how long ago the 2 drivers had left, and he also knew that they should be back by now. Things were set. Everything was ready. He thought about his backpack in the closet and how it had everything in it he needed. It was all in the waiting. 10 minutes after he started staring at the clock, the first driver came in. Was an older gentleman who was working part-time to save up for a big trip he would take his wife on at some point. James usually tuned him out by the time the man was talking about Hawaii and hoped that when he was older he wouldn't have to bus his ass after work just to go on a trip. He knew that money was hard to come by now, but he knew that when he got older he'd have the kind of job where he would make enough money not to worry about having to pay for a vacation. And this job was the first step. Second driver showed as soon as the first driver was waving goodbye and getting in his car. Second driver was younger, another townie that was going to college, and was James's connection to the townie parties, as well as some of James's other hard-to-find needs. He was a bit twitchy, and seemed to always be worried that something that had happened in the store would be blamed on him. Of course, he had 2 written warnings as well, and had been fired from most of the other jobs in town for either failing a drug test or dipping into the till. That night, however, he was a bit more stoned than he usually was, and James was worried he was going to fall asleep on the job, so he kept him off the road unless he had no choice but to send him out. Most of the night, they'd hung out in the back, watching cartoons, and daring James to eat things that were supposed to go on pizza. James obliged, of course. If he could get a joint or two by eating the supposedly raw shrimp, he'd do it and not tell the guy that the shrimp were all pre-cooked. He was thankful that the local college station was still playing music instead of going off the air as they'd done in previous summers. He'd had it playing on the boombox in the back, and it kept him from getting too bored staring out the front window, waiting for an order. The driver turned on the TV, and he wandered back to stare at it as James counted his bag and did the paperwork. He was up about $40, which James logged on the sheet, then took a $20 bill from the tips and stuffed it in his pocket. He took the rest to the break room and handed it to him. "Good night," James said. "You made about $25. Could have made more if you'd remembered where the houses were." "Shit, Jimbo," he said. "I must have gotten a good batch. I'm used to that damn ditchweed, so I smoked up a whole bunch before I realized how good the stuff was." "I hear you, buddy," James said. "You go on home and sleep it off. I think I'm good to wrap up." "Cool, dude," he said, his face brightening. "You want me to bring some of that tomorrow for you?" "I'm good," James said. "I still have a dime at home." The phrase "go home" became James's mental mantra, and he repeated it over and over in his mind, wishing that if he repeated it enough, it would come true. Finally, after he'd counted his money 3 times, and lost count at least once that James could tell, he said, "Coolness," and wandered out the front door. James went back to work and finished up what he had to do to close the shop. When he got done, he killed all but the backroom lights, opened the manager's office to put everything in the safe. The office was a tiny, dingy little room at the very back of the store next to the bathroom. The walls were painted the same ugly red color as the walls in the front of the store, but the room had no windows to make it seem brighter. The room felt oppressive, and the color seemed to absorb the light. There was a hook on the wall for the manager to hang his jacket or coat during the winter, 3 posters from corporate about how best to improve sales, none of which said to get the college to have students in town year-round, and a desk that had probably been bought used and worn down from there. The swivel chair at the desk was new but cheap and probably came from an office supply store with a big discount. The safe looked out of place in the room next to the desk and standing about as high as the desk did. It was a pretty high-tech safe for the place, but it had come from the corporate office and was supposed to cut down on employee theft. There was a slot in the top where an employee would drop the money after entering the employee number on the keypad on the front of the safe. At the end of the night, the manager or assistant manager was to open the safe, separate the bundles, count the money, log it in a sheet, and put it in a bank deposit bag. The safe would only open from the front between the hours of 1 and 3 in the morning so that no one could take the money out early, and you had to put in your employee number and the day's code for the safe. Only then would the safe open. He punched in his code and waited until he heard the familiar click that let him know the safe was open. He quickly took out the money and started filling out the sheets to account for all the money drops. It had been a good night. A little over $4,000 should be in the safe, and James hoped that he had the figures right, or he'd be here much later than he wanted to be, making sure everything balanced. A little over a half hour later, he had the bank deposit all ready and put it in a locked bag he'd be using to transport it. The rest of his shift was to lock the bag, turn on the alarm, lock up the store, and drive by the bank, dropping the money in the night deposit box, assuming everything went smoothly. Above the manager's desk was the alarm system and the store lights. He flipped off the lights and turned off the radio. When he turned it off, he heard a car outside. He looked at the clock and saw it was around 2:30 in the morning. "Who in the flaming blue hell could be here at this time of night?" he said to no one in particular. He looked around to make sure the camera in the store was on in case something went sideways. James looked over at his backpack, which held his gun. He heard the car just sitting outside the store with the engine running. He decided that the only thing he could do would be to get his gun and see who was waiting outside. There were a lot of skeevy people who knew that pizza places had a lot of cash on a Friday night, and he didn't want to have to deal with people like that unarmed. He grabbed the gun out of his backpack and shoved it in the back of the waistband of his pants. It was cold, uncomfortable, and heavy, making his pants, which were already too loose for their own good, sag to the point where he could feel that his underwear was exposed. He hated that. James decided to sneak out to the front and see who it was, but as he did, he remembered telling everyone over the last month or so that he was worried about getting ripped off. He'd hoped that he'd been spouting a lot of bullshit. And that is part 8 of All In, a shorter episode because the next chapter is fairly long, and I didn't want this episode to be extra super long. We'll save that for toward the end. I want to thank you for listening. I want to thank you for telling people about it. I want to thank you for talking about it on podcasts, for retweeting, for sharing the link on Facebook, for letting people know. The more that people know about the podcast, the more popular it can be, and the happier I'm going to be. Because, well, let's face it, the reason you write stories is because you want people to hear them. In order to help this podcast, we do have ads, like all of the other podcasts on the Solitaire Rose Network, and here they are. Believe it or not, kids, this silliness has actual real sponsors. Our first sponsor is Graze.com. Graze gives you healthy snacks sent to your house. You can have them delivered weekly, bi-weekly, monthly, and your first box is free if you use the code CORYS3R5B. Our second sponsor is Bombas. Bombas socks are some of the best socks in the world, and remember, for every pair you buy, they donate a pair to a homeless shelter or other worthy cause. Just go to bombas.gotocloud.org/SF30. That's right, those are our ads. Go check out our sponsors. I want to thank you for listening once again. Head on over to crazycomics.com. because Crazy Comics has been having a huge summer. We're doing our regular weekly episodes, but I've also had some pretty big interviews. I've interviewed Angel Medina. I've interviewed Mike Allred. I've got some other interviews coming up this summer that I'm pretty excited about, as well as a return to the story of EC Comics. So head on over there. You can also head on over to weeklynewsupdate.solitairerose.com. I have restarted my weekly news headline parody. And I'm very proud of the fact that I have been blocked on Twitter after putting out an episode that made fun of Donald Trump. That's right, Donald Trump has blocked me on Twitter. You don't get any better endorsement than that. And we'll be back next week with part 9. Another fine podcast from Solitaire Rose Networks.
The end.